All right, Ben Standing here with you until 10 o'clock on 106.7 The Fan. I've talked a bunch about the Commanders, Tyreek Hill. Is there a potential marriage there now that the Dolphins released the wide receiver dealing with injuries? But we know when he's healthy, he's got all that kind of speed and then some. But look, let's be super honest. At this point on the NFL calendar, this is pure speculation. We've got to get through the combine. That's where a lot of the free agency talk will happen between agents and teams. We'll get a little better feel for what, you know, what the marketplace is going to look like, the draft as well. But who doesn't like speculation? It's got to be half the reason why sports talk radio even exists, right? I mean, come on. So, you know, this guy is not based in speculation. He's based in hard facts. But Mitch Tischler from Monumental Sports, host of the Beltway Football Podcast, he likes to have some fun, right, Mitch? I mean, we can have some fun here and ponder what could happen, right?
Yeah, let's dig in on a couple fun topics here.
All right, well, let's just start. I've been talking about Tyreek Hill. On the surface, this is exactly what this team needs. Playmaker, speed, give Terry McLaurin some help. The opposite, the downside is he's coming off significant injury. We don't know when he'll be back. He's had certainly some off-the-field issues, and he's over 30, which according to what we found out last summer is not ideal for a receiver with this administration. So, all that said, how interested are you in Tyreek Hill for the Commanders?
Yeah, I'm only kind of moderately interested at this point, and granted, it's February 16th. We'll have a little bit of time before free agency opens, and the team gets a chance to look at his medicals and see kind of how the recovery from that knee surgeries went. But my worry with Tyreek Hill is that he fits kind of the description that, to me, of what this front office did last offseason, which was kind of hoping for the best and not planning for the worst. And if you bring in Tyreek Hill as your high-dollar, big-time offensive free agent, I think you're really hoping that you get Tyreek Hill from, you know, two seasons ago, because you don't know what he's going to look like on the field post-knee injury. Is he going to have the same kind of speed? Is he going to have the same kind of cutting ability? And if either of those are diminished, honestly, even a little bit, I think you're looking at a receiver who's not quite, you know, of the same ilk as Tyreek Hill that we think of. And, you know, it's interesting because I don't know that there's really that good of a group of free agent wide receivers this year that are going to become available. So I think he's going to get a fair amount of money here in free agency. And he's exactly the type of player that I don't want this organization to target as they move forward, because, you know, as they talked about last week when we were, you know, at the coordinator podium, you know, they want to get faster, they want to get stronger, they want to get younger. He's kind of, you know, maybe he adds to the speed, but if he's not that same Tyreek Hill post-injury, I don't know how much he's going to help you.
You know, lumping in all the various receiver scenarios for Washington, you know, you've got the Tyreek Hill one again. I don't know that Adam Peters is interested at all, but it needs to be dimensioned. We know that there's been a lot of conversation about Brandon Ayuk, ties to Jaden Daniels and Adam Peters. And if he is healthy, they could very much use that, right? Another, you know, he's a youngish receiver still, playmaker on the outside, could be like a receiver one if he's right. But again, there's baggage there with him. The 49ers were like, hey, it's been real. We'll catch you on the flip side. So they're moving on. And then there is, of course, the draft, which we know that ideally we think Washington should take a defensive player, but they also need a young guy to pair with Jaden Daniels going forward. So how do you kind of, when you look at the broader landscape like that, do any of those three scenarios sort of ring true more to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of coming around on the Brandon Ayuk coming to Washington. Initially, I was kind of down and out on it, especially with, you know, all the shenanigans that happened in San Fran. But ultimately, I think, you know, this front office obviously will consult with Jaden on it. And, you know, we know the type of person Jaden Daniels is. We know the type of work ethic he has. And if he's able to, you know, to instill some of that in Brandon Ayuk and kind of, you know, even if it's dragging and kicking and screaming, you know, to work out hard and play hard, you know, he could have a high upside. But kind of like I talked about Tyreek Hill, like if you bring in Ayuk, I don't want to bring him in as the solution. I want to bring him in as part of the solution and hope that it turns out very well, but also be prepared in case, you know, it flames out horribly, which we've seen, you know, from players around the NFL who showed they might not love football or might not love the business of football, which is something that we saw with Brandon in San Francisco. It's funny that you bring up the draft, or interesting that you bring up the draft, because I'm not quite there yet with it, because I've been firm that they need to take the best defensive player available. However, they do have, you know, close to, you know, $70 million-ish dollars in free agency. Obviously, they can add more with some restructures and cuts and all those different things. Maybe you spend, you know, 80% of that on the defensive side of the football, and all of a sudden, Carnell Tate looks a little tasty sitting there at number seven, because as much as I like Deebo Samuel's game and I like the Swiss Army knife of what he was able to bring last year, I don't think he was the best complement to Terry McLaurin in terms of skill set on the field, because he doesn't threaten defenses deep much. You know, he's more of the physical, you know, type receiver. And thus, you know, when the two were on the field, which clearly wasn't very often last year with injuries, teams were still able to shade over to Terry, you know, shade his safety over there, bracket him, double him, because he was really the only deep threat on this football team. So I do think they need to bring in speed at receiver and, you know, bring in a true complementary receiver to Terry, somebody that can help him out and help David Blau. I'm starting to get a little more interested in the idea of going that direction in the draft and, you know, spending the most of my resources in the offseason on the defense, and obviously, you know, the other top 100 pick, maybe spend if it's safety or corner or, you know, edge rusher, whoever it may be. But it's going to be, you know, interesting to see how this front office kind of prioritizes, you know, filling holes and then also supporting Jaden, because they do need, they need speed, they need a second pass catcher, and they need a pass catching tight end as well, which obviously could cost a fair amount of money too.
This is why doing mock drafts before free agency is stupid. Can you imagine people who, like, everybody thinks of as like a mock draft person, and this is what they do, and it's like complete garbage until you get past free agency? Don't you feel bad for those people?
Yeah, I hate those mock drafters. They're the worst. They're except the worst. For the ones that win the contest.
Yes, they're terrible. They're so stupid. What a waste of time. Let's go to some stuff a little more grounded, though. Things we already kind of know about the Commanders in terms of like guys who are on the roster. Because, look, for all the talk of free agency in the draft, they also need some of the players who are on the roster to step up a bit more. Now, the 2025 draft class, I feel like it gets lumped in a bit with the 2024 class, which that group still has a lot to prove beyond, say, the quarterback. The 2025 group, though, Josh Connerly, Trey Amos, Bill, Jalen Lane as a punt returner, those guys all did some good work. Again, and this is all during a down season, which of those guys for you is like you really think maybe can go up a notch this year and, you know, not only take that position off the board maybe as like even any kind of a need, but also turn it into a strength?
Well, I think Bill has that opportunity too. Because we were talking draft, I know folks love Jeremiah Love, but to me, I think that's more of a luxury pick in that I think Bill gives you enough, and we've seen enough upside to hope that he'll develop into the player that, you know, we think that he'll be. So I think running back, I think Bill has a really good opportunity here to step in and kind of take over that role kind of in the, not necessarily a full three down back, but, you know, certainly a first and second down back. And if he's able to develop some of those pass catching skills, see a little bit more of the field. But the guy that I'm most interested in defensively, or the guy that I think will take the biggest jump, is Trey Amos. I've been pretty excited about him since they drafted him, and I liked a lot of what I saw early in the year, obviously pre-injury. But I take the view of it as, you know, with Durante Jones, who hopefully is going to bring a more aggressive defensive style, I think that's going to give these corners more opportunities to make plays on the ball and take advantage of bad quarterback decisions. If you're, you know, I think kind of the past 2 years under Witt and Quinn, the defense has been far too passive. They've allowed themselves to be dictated to instead of being aggressive and dictating to offenses what they need to do. And the more they're able to get after the quarterback, I think the more that they're going to force quarterbacks to get rid of the ball quickly and have to make quick decisions. Thus, the defensive secondary should have some opportunities to get their hands on the ball a little bit more. And with what we saw from Trey last year, I think he has a chance to really take a big step next season.
We're talking with Mitch Tischler, of course, one of the co-hosts, one of the hosts of the Beltway Football Podcast with JP Findlay, who is, of course, here all the time on these airwaves. Let me go back to that 2024 class. Again, injuries aside, I think we're all good with the quarterback. But almost everybody else, there's at least some question. There's like some good stuff there. Johnny Newton had 3 sacks. We've seen Mikey Stanner still get a bunch of interceptions his first 2 seasons. You know, Jordan McGee showed off his athleticism last year in more of a limited role. But it's also hard to look at a lot of these guys and think, boy, they are ready to take on a bigger role. Ben Sinnott, that would be cool if he was. I don't know. Is Brandon Coleman ready to step in at left guard if Chris Paul's not back? I don't know. What's your read on that group? Because I think to me, again, as much as we talk about all this free agency and the upcoming draft, that group has got to step up. Otherwise, I just don't know that they can solve all their problems in one off season.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be able to solve all their problems in one off season anyway. Yes. And to me, you know, one of my complaints about the way that Adam Peters has kind of approached this is that, you know, you look at this roster today, and it's not demonstrably deeper than it was when he took over. And, you know, that's one of the things that they talked about, was wanting to build this thing long-term. You know, if Brandon Coleman, you know, is able to step in at left guard, if Chris Paul leaves, that would be great. I think obviously he has to get, you know, he has to be able to stay healthy, but he's also a really nice depth piece because he can play, you know, tackle or guard there in the league. And that's, you know, ultimately not the biggest indictment on him if he's able to be a, you know, long-term NFL player and be a reliable backup, if that's, you know, what it comes to. And ultimately, you know, the guys after the first and second round, you want them all to become starters, but you also need those picks to hit because you need to build out the depth and, you know, make it so that one injury on one side of the ball doesn't destroy your chances for the season. Jordan McGee is the guy that I'm most excited about. Prior to this season, I wanted to see him on the field a lot more. I think he has, you know, all the makeup of, you know, being a solid NFL starter. But we haven't had an opportunity to see it because of the way that the defense was run and the amount of plays that he got. It wasn't until later in the year. And, you know, I think that there's some real opportunities for these guys to step up and play meaningful roles. I think Johnny Newton, you know, his pass rush ability with Durante Jones coming in Johnny Newton might be a better fit in a Durante Jones defense because he does a better job of getting after the quarterback, but isn't necessarily as strong against the run. I think the same goes for Mikey Stanner still. You know, he's a guy that's shown an ability to get his hands on the ball and get interceptions. Of course, you know, last year particularly, he was flip-flopping around between inside, outside, and I think those corners and secondary were asked to cover for far too long. So I think I think you can look at kind of the entire draft class and see opportunity. I mean, right now, Ben Sinnott is your pass-catching tight end that's on the roster. Do we all think they need to bring in, you know, somebody a little more established? Yes. But Ben Sinnott was also buried on the depth chart behind Zach Ertz and never really got a real opportunity with Cliff Kingsbury, you know, having worked with Zach Ertz and knowing him so well. So, you know, this is an important offseason / you know, preseason for this team, for the front office, for the coaching staff, and certainly for some of the young players who haven't had the opportunities that maybe they should have had earlier in their career with all the veterans that were brought into this this roster.
All right, the last couple seconds here with Mitch, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask the big man about big men in the trenches here. Two things happened of note this offseason. One, the Commanders moved on from offensive line coach Bobby Johnson, replaced him with the assistant offensive line coach Darnell Stapleton. Secondly, the Dolphins today also released Bradley Chubb, edge rusher. I'll let you choose dealer's choice, whichever topic you want to hit on. What's more interesting to you of those things as it relates to Washington here going forward?
I'll give you my quick Bradley Chubb thought. Similar to what we talked about with Tyreek Hill, if he's brought in as a part of a solution, but I don't want him to be the solution at edge rusher. You know, you have a guy who's been injured a fair amount. He missed the entire 2024 season. Obviously, when he's been healthy, he's been good. He's getting a little further up there in age. You know, I don't think that he's a guy that I want to end up paying the amount that he's going to end up demanding on the open market. So I'd be interested in bringing him in alongside, you know, either a young player or a more established guy. Trey Hendrickson's the name that I want them to go get. I think 2 years, $52 million, whatever the numbers end up looking like, is a type of deal that I'd love to see for him. I think he's somebody that can help you right away. What was the other one? No, offensive line. It's an interesting move. I like that there are a lot of veterans in that O-line room, so I don't think there's a ton of pressure on Darnell Stapleton to, you know, reinvent the wheel per se there. But it, you know, Bobby Johnson's a guy that we all got to know and that we liked him, and I thought he did a really good job with this O-line. I thought last year was, you know, probably ticking up to the one of the better O-lines that we've seen since, you know, probably the best O-line since Trent Williams left. So that was good to see, and obviously a big part of that is Laremy Tunsil. So, you know, it'll be there's a lot of questions to be answered with this team, you know, from the top on down.
All right. Well, there's no questions. If you want to listen to a Commanders podcast, listen to Last Man Standing, but also listen to the Beltway Football podcast with Mitch and JP. They do a great job. My guy, I will see you in the combine next week. I haven't seen the weather, so I don't know how bad it's going to be, but it can't be worse than what it's been here the last few weeks. So, and plus, that's like an indoor event anyway. I barely ever have to go outside there. So we'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll be okay over there. And for everyone listening, subscribe to the Last Man Standing Substack. Go get your news there. Best in the biz.
Well, this is why Mitch is on the show, because he lies to the audience. I appreciate that. I really appreciate it, my guy. Thank you so much. Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports, talking about the Commanders. So we have got, it's going to be, there's just so many fascinating layers to all this. It's not just simply the Commanders have to go out and get this position or that position. You have to look at all the moves together, and it makes it a really, really fascinating look. What do we got here? Some speed skating going on.
Yeah, I'm kind of fascinated by it.
Speed skating is wild. I mean, it is, you know, essentially, you know, it's like running the track, except you're doing it, you know, the turns are so
tight. They have their hand on the ground. You notice that? Like, yeah. That's the help. It helps them turn. Oh, there it is. Two just fell. Oh, three. One's going backwards. That was the end of the race anyway. Italy won.
Maybe he was like diving a little bit for the
possibly. It looks like Italy won.
Yeah.
One guy's hurt, maybe.
What a crazy, I mean, all these sports are bonkers. The endurance you need for this one, the strength in your legs you need for this, and like I said, the ability to, your balance that you need to make those turns. Good luck. I don't know how I used to be able to skate back in the day, but you know, we're talking like in the open ice at like the Cabin John ice rink with, you know, not going backwards, not going super fast, not making crazy turns. That is whole next level. All right. What do you think here, Wes? Take a break okay. We're going to take a break. We've got more to discuss, including there's a really, really weird college basketball game being played in DC. It's an amazing matchup. I have no idea what's being played here. We'll get to that next here on 106.7 The Fan. All right, we're gonna put a pin in the Commanders. We'll put them on the side and get to some other topics. Somebody, as I was driving in to the studio today, somebody asked me a question about college basketball, and it was specifically this: like, there is a fascinating game this weekend. You've got Duke, number 3 in the country, against Michigan, number 1 in the country. You can't get much better than that. We're not even factoring in like historic, you know, aspects of these teams, just the fact that they have a combined record of 47-3. Obviously Duke's got Cameron Boozer, one of the top prospects in terms of the upcoming NBA draft. We know that the Wizards are one of those teams positioned to try to get a guy like that. But here's what's weird about this game. First of all, it's a non-conference game in February. That in itself is odd, but okay, that does happen occasionally. But this game is not being played in Cameron Indoor. It's also not being played in Ann Arbor. Nope, it is being played 5 minutes from where I am sitting. It is being played at Capital One Arena this weekend. That is very, very weird. Now, if you told me that was like, you know, back in the day when we would have the late John Feinstein's event in DC, would always have these sort of doubleheader or tripleheader matchups. Maryland would often play. I was there once and I played Kansas, and they would play some top-notch teams, and then it would be like another game or two. You know, maybe you could see, hey, that's pretty cool that these two teams wanted to come here and play and help out a charity and those types of things. And this game is being played for a charity, okay? Why is it being played here, though, is the real question. And I just tried doing some quick, like, Googling on this, and I couldn't find a great answer. This is going to be called the Duel in the District. These two teams have not played since 2013. So it's not like this is like an ongoing head-to-head series that they just, for whatever reason, felt they needed to play it here. It is weird. But here's what I wonder about. To me, and this is maybe just me being a conspiracy theorist, I don't know. To me, it is a signal that Duke and Michigan, we know that this area is very rich with prospects. Several years ago, I was in College Park randomly meeting a couple coworkers somewhere off of Route 1 and middle of the day, and there's Juwan Howard there because he was in town to recruit Hunter Dickinson. It was at DeMath at the time, ended up going to Michigan. We know there's a litany of players from this area who went on to Duke, you know, going back to Johnny Dawkins and Tommy Amaker way back when. I almost think this is like their way of saying, oh, the DC market is wide open right now. Maryland obviously had a really good year last year, Sweet 16, but it all imploded with Kevin Willard, bizarre exit, right? Buzz Williams comes in. I think Buzz Williams was a pretty reasonable hire to make, but that has not gone well this year. Now, again, they decided to make this game before the season started, so it does not impact. It's not anything to do with what Maryland is doing this year. But nonetheless, Maryland has not been, you know, if we're being realistic, has not been a top-tier college basketball program for some time. Georgetown has really gone off the rails in recent years. It's been, I don't have it in front of me here, but it's been a while since we ever looked at Georgetown and thought, hey, this is a team that can make a run in the tournament, let alone make the tournament. The Patrick Ewing era did not go so great. The Ed Cooley era is ongoing. Georgetown's been better this year. I'll give you that. They took Connecticut to the wire the other night. And then you have the other schools, George Mason, GWAU. You know, that's like a different level of competition. Mason's having a tremendous year, but we're not really, from a recruiting perspective, they're not at the same level typically at Maryland or Georgetown, let alone Duke or Michigan. So I don't know. I just kind of wonder, did somebody look at this and say, hey, let's go raid? Like, a lot of the reason, I don't know if people always know this, we typically look at scheduling from a perspective of like, well, how is this going to help this team when it comes time to choose who's going to go in the NCAA tournament? Is this enough for strength of schedule? Does this matchup give us that, whatever it is, quad one, quad two game, you know, RPI back in the day? There is some of that for sure. But a lot of it is also, and maybe even more so, is that it's taking your program and putting it on the road in front of a fan base or in front of potential recruits to say, hey, this is who we are. This is what we do. We want you to see our product. Come be part of what we do. And that's why people go play road games the way they do oftentimes at a conference. But to do it in February when you're not playing a home team or any of the local teams, if this was Michigan against Georgetown, I mean, Maryland, obviously, Michigan gets into this area every so often because Maryland's now in the Big Ten. Very weird. I don't know what to make of this. You are a Big Ten guy, Ohio State and all that.
Yeah, I actually have friends on both sides, and they're going to this game.
So like I said, I'll be honest, like I didn't realize this game was being played here until today. So maybe I'm missing something here, but what am I missing?
It's been scheduled for several months. They bought tickets. I know my friends bought tickets around, it was $100, $150. Now it's around $380.
So well, I mean, look, again.
They got their tickets.
From a pure matchup perspective, this is as good as it's going to get in college basketball.
Yeah, oh, for sure. One versus three. Duke, to be honest with you, is really not that far. It's 4 hours away. It's about the same distance as Virginia Tech. So the two options is either Charlotte or D.C. Charlotte is, I don't know, probably an hour away. Not as big of a city. And D.C., I mean, this, you're talking about the number eight market in the country. And the number one team is playing. I mean, they saw it as a cash grab in a way, and for NCAA.
I mean, like, I would get it more. Like, if they were playing this game at Madison Square Garden, I probably wouldn't think twice, and I would not view it the same way I'm talking about it now, where, like, oh, they don't think St. John's is all that. Obviously, with Rick Pitino, St. John's, you know, has turned it around significantly. But Madison Square Garden is the event place. It's the most famous basketball arena, or whatever the saying is. That I get, and New York is its whole animal unto itself. I just think it's really weird. And also, again, Michigan is another Big Ten school, so from that perspective, it's a Maryland rival. Duke is a historic Maryland rival. That one is like, you know, there's no love lost there. That is still, I no longer have emotion when it comes to sports, really. I can't stand Duke. That was one of the teams I just grew up, could not stand, still can't. Not interested in seeing Duke win. So why them coming here, it almost feels like they're thumbing their nose at Maryland a little bit.
This is what I gotta, if I'm gonna make an assumption, and it's from my inner circle, because I do a podcast, Step Brothers podcast. I'm obviously an Ohio State fan, and my buddy's a Team Up North fan. So they know there's a lot of alumni for Michigan and Duke here. In fact, I was hanging out with Duke alumni today. Several Duke alumni, so they know that.
Did you take a shower afterwards, or
I did not.
Oh, okay.
I should. Well,
stay over
not,
there.
Well, it's not. They're not. I hate saying it, but Michigan fans, which I do take a shower after I hang out with people from the state up north. So if they know that there's a ton of alumni from both those schools, then this is a perfect place to play, because, I mean, Duke is going to be the home team. You're 4 hours away. I would guess there's more Duke alumni here, and maybe they just didn't want to make it as lopsided if they played it in Charlotte, which the AC tournament is usually played in. So maybe that was the reason why. And maybe they want to do these neutral sites. And you see the NFL going to, outside the United States. College football is doing the same thing. You go to Ireland, you're going to Germany pretty soon. So maybe they're doing something like that.
I don't know. I mean, if you're going over there, that's for marketing. That's not for recruiting. Yeah, yeah. You're not offending the University of Ireland, potentially.
So do you feel like you're offending somebody here?
I just think
because if you're offending anyone, I think it's Duke, because I believe that this was their home game.
Well, I mean, look, Duke is such a, unique program. They can go play everywhere, wherever they go. I mean, Duke, to their credit, Pete Krzyzewski, and even now, they'll play anybody, anytime, anywhere. Good for them. It's good for the sport. I just, like, again, if this game took place in December, where the non-conference games typically happen, I still think it would be weird that it was here, but I'd be like, I don't know. But, like, to do it in February and do it, I don't know. I mean, like, you could just play the game at either of their places. I get that you want more fans if it's for charity and you want to bring in more people. What's going to be interesting is also, obviously, the Capital One Arena is where Georgetown plays its home games. And look, I grew up a Georgetown fan, all that stuff. When I was a kid, nobody told me you couldn't root for Georgetown and Maryland. It's my one sort of, I believe you got to root for one team. It's my one overlap. And they never played, so it didn't really matter. Played each other, so it didn't really matter. Cap One used to be, or when it was the Capitol Center, used to be humming for Georgetown games. Sellout crowds, whether it was the Ewing era or the morning, Allen Iverson, the Big East was the top of the food chain for college basketball, all that. It has not obviously been that for a minute. I can't even imagine what the biggest crowd they have drawn this year. I'm sure it's not close to a sellout. If this thing is like, I wonder if this crowd is going to be bigger than that one. And if it is, while it's one versus three, so that is a bigger, it's not just Duke, Michigan, it's one versus three. That is kind of embarrassing.
I think it will be a bigger crowd. If somebody gave me tickets to it, I would probably put on a Duke shirt. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to put it on piss yellow. my goodness, terrible colors. But like you said, I mean, money, one versus three. I think in February it's interesting how I guess they knew that both these teams were going to be really good. Because how can you just assume that Duke and Michigan in the beginning of the year, oh, let's plan this for February. Oh, they're 1-3. You know, they're 1-3 ranked.
Yeah. Oh, they have
a prediction.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think Duke was considered to be obviously a top team, and Michigan is typically, I feel like, you can tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like Michigan is maybe
their basketball program is more elite than their football. Because I mean, I've grown up, and besides the years that Michigan cheated, we beat them. It was 8 years in a row, and then they cheated, and then beat them this year. So, but for Michigan basketball, they had Jordan Poole, Hunter Dickinson. They've been a little bit more elite.
I feel like I need to have somebody from Michigan here for like equal time. Like this is like a political thing.
Hey, yesterday I do a podcast every Sunday. It's a Michigan Ohio State podcast, so I'm dealing with him every week. It's cordial as much as possible.
Just in case anybody asks about that, we can say, okay, we can point to your podcast and say, no. We had somebody here for that. I just still don't understand this game here. You can give me any reason you want. I just find it bizarre that it is here. And again, that it is happening at a time that Georgetown and Maryland, the two teams here that have been at the upper echelons of college basketball for most of my life, maybe not as much for Georgetown in recent years, and Maryland, it's been, a bit of a downturn since, they were a title team in the early part of this century. That just is not a good look for them, I would just say. And they need to rectify this. They cannot have other teams coming in here and playing a neutral side game in February. And I mean, and at worst, they're 1-3. It is a game everybody will pay attention to. That is a bad look for these
right.
guys.
Last thing I'll say before we go to break. If you asked around kids my age, obviously I know Georgetown plays at Capital One Arena because, I'm in the industry. But if you ask like a regular 22-year-old, where does Georgetown play? They would think there's some arena on campus. So that is, at least for my generation, nobody cares or no one has been to a Georgetown game. The only reason why you would know is because you go to a Wizards or Caps game and you see the banners hanging from the rafters.
You're preaching to the choir about the problem. Like I said, Maryland, at least last year, made the Sweet 16, but then things imploded. Georgetown's been off the radar, and this is their home court. This is not a good look. All right, we've got more to discuss. We're going to talk about Wizards and NBA All-Star Weekend at the top of the hour. Ben Standing with you here until 10 on 106.7 The Fan. All right, we have talked a little bit tonight about the fact that the Miami Dolphins made some notable moves today that, at a minimum, shake up NFL free agency. These guys actually are available to sign now. That's wide receiver Tyreek Hill and edge rusher Bradley Chubb. But in the case of Hill, who, look, from a Commander's perspective, this is what they need, a guy who can stretch the field, race past anybody out there when healthy. The health part is the question, though. Tyreek Hill, early last season, tore his ACL, dislocated knee, and it doesn't sound like, based on the initial reporting following this release, that anybody is quite sure when he'll be able to come back. Now, one person who may have some insight is his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. And when this news came out today, Drew Rosenhaus was interviewed about Tyreek Hill's status. And again, for right now, until we get more information, this is as good as it gets. So here's what Drew Rosenhaus, agent for Tyreek Hill, had to say about when he thinks the receiver might be able to come back.
A lot of people are wondering about your client, Tyreek Hill. Where is he at in the rehab process?
One day at a time, Josh. He's got a long road ahead of him. I think, we made that clear, but no one works harder than Tyreek. He's done a fabulous job. All in all, he's progressing well. He had a challenging injury, but he is working his tail off and doing everything he can to get back as soon as possible. But certainly, Tyreek would be the first one to say that he still has, a lot of work to do.
Is the goal for him to play again? Has he told you, hey, Drew, I want to play again?
Yes, he has. He has said to me that he wants to play again. And if Tyreek has made up his mind that that's what he wants to do, then I have no doubt that he'll do it. He's the kind of guy that accomplishes everything he sets his mind to. He's an incredible worker and competitor. He's just had an absolute Hall of Fame career. And if he ultimately follows through on his decision to play, you know, I reserve that up to Tyreek. You know, obviously it's something he could change his mind at any time. But from what he's told me, he has said that he does intend to play next season.
All right. That was, again, Drew Rosenhaus, noted agent, also the agent for Tyreek Hill. He's talking to Josh Moser, a reporter down in Miami. Again, the Dolphins released Tyreek Hill today. So, again, we can all talk about this as a hypothetical, something that Washington or other teams could look at. But listening to Drew Rosenhaus there, you know, look, an agent is always going to speak as positively as possible about their client. And for therefore for him to say he's got a long way to go, he said that a couple of times, that is significant. I mean, he did say that Tyreek Hill is working his way to play again. That's, of course, you know, he's got to want to do it. Otherwise, we don't. What's the point of even having the conversation? But he is still a ways away. So, you know, I don't know if he's not able. If there's like a lot of uncertainty about when he will be able to come back, it's possible Tyreek Hill is available past the start of free agency. Again, he could be signed now, but if you're a team, I mean, they're gonna have to look at the medicals, obviously. Get the thumbs up from their own staff in terms of, well, we think this guy can play not just sooner than later, but also play at a potentially good level, high level. Maybe he's never the Tyreek Hill who at points felt like he could be like an MVP candidate with the way he was just making plays for the Chiefs. Then he gets traded to Miami. But it is another name that is now in the pool for free agency. But to me, Wes, I'm curious what you think. Like, now we've talked about this for a little bit, but now hearing Drew Rosenhaus say that, I feel slightly less optimistic about the idea of saying Tyreek Hill would be the A plan. And to be clear, I have no sense that that's Washington's vision. They may have zero interest, age, injury, some off the field stuff. None of that seems to exactly work for Washington. But at the same time, beggars can't be choosers, and they absolutely have to get some help for Terry McLaurin.
Yeah. To me, it's going to be a no go. He's going to be 32 here in a couple weeks on March 1st. I'm going to go back. I just don't think going to a veteran presence is the way to go. You have that in 30-year-old Terry McLaurin, who to me is better right now than Tyreek Hill. So why do you need to spend, $25 million? Do you think that's what it would be for Tyreek Hill?
I doubt it'll be anything like that just because of the injury. Now, like, if I had 18? To guess, well, if I had to guess with Tyreek Hill based on the situation and what Drew Rosenhaus just said, I probably would only look to get like a 1-year deal. Maybe there's a lot of incentives in there to maximize the number, but you probably would want it so that whatever happens this season for the next offseason, he's like, okay, we've worked past the injury. Got back into some sort of shape. He was able to show whatever he could do. And then you maybe try to get that one last deal. So, I don't know what a number would be because so much will depend on the medical and when he can play. But
I just, to me, Tyreek Hill is an NBA move where you get, you know, like the Wizards did with Trae Young and Anthony Davis. You're getting a household name. Not a football move where let's develop this guy. This is a guy who can fill our hole that we need that is causing us not to get over the hump. To me, Tyreek Hill, the same way that, you know, you talked about the running back like Jeremiah Love or Breece Hall, why would you spend the money on that? That to me is Tyreek Hill at the wide receivers. Your quarterback should be making these wide receivers look good. That's what Jaden Daniels did 2 years ago. You know, they compared him to C.J. Stroud, who made his wide receivers also look good. Guys who you barely even know the name of and guys who don't make Pro Bowls, but they still make catches and get 800-yard seasons. So it's a no-go for me. And obviously the off-the-field issues with his family is also a problem that I have that you see with him.
Yeah, you know, look, as much as we have talked about it a little bit tonight, look, it's again, at this point on the NFL calendar, there's very little to go on when we're talking about free agency and the draft. You know, the Super Bowl, we can still smell this. You know, the Super Bowl wasn't that long ago. There are still some teams that are still assembling their coaching staff. So this is, we're still that part of the offseason. We won't get to sort of the transactional part for real, until we get to the combine next week. And even then, that just sort of starts to give us a first taste. If you recall, back in 2022, when Washington traded for Carson Wentz, they went that direction after Seattle traded Russell Wilson to Denver. That trade took place during the combine. So next week, we'll start to probably get some noise, if not actual moves. Then we start to maybe have a better feel for what the marketplace looks like for certain teams and certain players. In this case, again, the medical is going to be so important. But once we start getting more information, then we'll have a better feel for where Tyreek Hill, Bradley Chubb, and you know any of the free agents that we already know about, what their situations look like. So right now, speculation is completely fine. You know, I like to talk in grounded terms, but right now, speculation is kind of all we have. And again, all things being equal, Washington needs exactly what Tyreek Hill can offer. But I will say this, as somebody who has been like, I'm not that interested in Brandon Ayuk for this team, between the injuries, between whatever the heck went on with San Francisco that had Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch kind of being like, we haven't talked to this guy in weeks. We're good. It's been real. Go. And, you know, when he was with Jaden Daniels in 2024, and he's sharing practice clips that he was watching with Jaden Daniels, he's sharing them on social media, which was a no-no. I don't want him, but I'd rather have him than Tyreek Hill.
Something that I find forgivable is, you know, you draft a player or, you know, a second-year guy, let's say Jalen Lane gets hurt next year. Just, it happens. It's football. What is not forgivable is picking up someone's contract, bringing Tyreek Hill, someone who just had to get carted off a field, and then he gets injured again. To me, that's an unforgivable action from the front office after what was an injury-prone year for the Commanders.
And also, I would add to this, similar to when we talked before in a very different way, but you asked about Breece Hall, the running back from the Jets, and I was saying that for me, Breece Hall is a good player. Investing in him would be fine. There's no, doesn't have these concerns that we're talking about here with Tyreek Hill. But as I said, to me, I'm not investing in a running back unless I feel I'm that one piece away. You know, I think the Raiders made a mistake last year drafting Ashton Jeanty at 6, not because he's a bad player, but because running back shelf life is typically shorter than other positions, and that team stunk. And we kind of knew they wouldn't be great most likely going in. I view the same thing here in the way of a Tyreek Hill type player. To me, if I'm going to take this risk, it's sort of like, okay, maybe he doesn't play the first half of the year, but we think we're going to be in contention. And when we get to the end of the year in the postseason, now to have that extra weapon, that could be, we already have an established team. That could be the thing that puts us over the top as well. That is not where Washington is. They need much more grounded pieces, which is why, as much as this Tyreek Hill thing is just, it just happened today, so we're discussing it. But Brandon Ayuk, we've been talking about that for a long, long time, because there is more logic to it because of the connections with the quarterback and the GM. That one I get a little bit more, but I still would struggle with it because of his individual habits. But at least Brandon Ayuk, if he's healthy, you would think he would be by we get to this offseason or get to the mini camp, training camp, that'll be fine, that perspective. Tyreek Hill, it's too much of a risk for where Washington is right now. So I wouldn't do it if I were them, but hey, again, they need speed somewhere, so we're going to have to see what they do. All right, I'm going to guess you're going to want me to get out of here. We have got another hour to go here on 106.7 The Fan. Ben Standing with you till 10 o'clock on Overtime on 106.7 The Fan.